Walk me through this. Soderbergh discloses he used Meta's AI to generate a few background graphics on a Lenin doc, and somehow that disclosure becomes the story, not any actual footage. Is that the work failing or the audience refusing to look? Or is it just the backlash against AI talking?
It's interesting because the instinct to judge the company something keeps rather than the thing itself seems to be a reflex right now. We see it with Grimes, with art valuation tools, and even with a new AI art magazine before anyone's even seen what they're doing. That's really the threat of this issue. Kraft has quietly moved from making the thing well to getting anyone to believe in what you made. Credibility is the new Kraft. The skepticism arrives before the work does. And we're going to get into some pretty unexpected places this week, like the least glamorous corners of AI in the arts, that boring back office stuff nobody's mad about yet. We'll check out Grimes ending up on LinkedIn, Soderbergh's Lenin film, an AI art magazine that refuses to worship its subject, and art valuation turning into a bet you can trade. This is issue number 81 of the Intersect newsletter.
Here's the least dramatic AI story in the whole issue, and it's on purpose. The part of the art world that actually uses AI the most is the part nobody's angry about, the bookkeeping.
Right. Joe Lawson-Tancred's piece at ArtNet News makes such a quiet point about it. The art market knows it can't ignore AI, but they really have no idea what to do with it beyond the obvious. But now, tailored tools are finally arriving. We're seeing Bonhams partner with ArtDive from Market Analytics, and the freshly merged Artsy and ArtNet are building AI right into their founding mission.
And the real action isn't even generative at all. It's all about data, discovery, and operations.
Exactly. Most people picture a machine spitting out images, and they get angry at that picture. But in practice, art organizations use AI for the stuff artists despise. Marketing research, bookkeeping, accounting, all that finance drudgery that eats studio time.
So that's not a culture war, that's a spreadsheet.
Pretty much. And you have Spiegler predicting a big shift as AI puts high-performance technology in the reach of small businesses and individuals for whom it was not financially viable before. What's really telling here is what's missing: outrage. Nobody storms out of a gallery because the back office reconciled invoices faster. This is the one corner where credibility isn't on the line, precisely because nobody's watching. The skepticism this whole issue circles only kicks in once the public can see the seams.
It feels like Juergen's read is that both popular pictures of AI and the arts miss the point. You have the back office automation crowd on one pole and the image generation crowd on the other. But what actually interests him is the middle. Yes,
he's looking at AI interpreting a data set in a way that becomes part of the artwork itself, stitched into everyday practice. Not front-end image generation, not back-office plumbing.
So where does the tool stop being a tool and start being a collaborator in the work? That's the real question, the part that actually earns scrutiny. The bookkeeping just earns a shrug. So that's AI in the corner where nobody's looking. What happens when an artist walks into the room holding the plumbing company's hand? This whole issue, you know, it lives right in that uncomfortable middle ground. Capable work just bounces off audiences who've already made up their minds. And that gap, what the tools can actually do versus what people will even trust, that's exactly where the Intersect newsletter sits every week. It's not about cheerleading the tech or just dismissing it outright. If that tension is your thing, the full spectrum from analog craft to generative design, subscribe to the newsletter at theintersect.art.
You'll get weekly curated stories, real analysis, and perspectives directly from people who are actually doing the work.
Okay, back into the issue. There's one line in this one that got stuck in my head like a bad jingle, and I kind of can't get rid of it.
You're talking about Al Warburton's piece in The Guardian, right? It's ostensibly about Grimes showing up on LinkedIn to promote an NVIDIA conference appearance, but you're right. It's really a dry, funny autopsy of what happens when every platform artists actually want to be on gets hollowed out.
Yeah. I mean, Warburton released his own AI-themed film on LinkedIn before Grimes got there, so he has the receipts and the self-awareness to
call the whole thing a counterintuitive brag.
And that's exactly where that line you're thinking of comes in. Pivoting to LinkedIn might seem a depressing thing for an artist to resort to, a bit like moving in with your boomer grandparents. It's both genuinely funny and genuinely sad, which feels like the right register for 2026.
It really does. And it fits the issue's running problem. The Grimes backlash wasn't really about the work itself. It was about the company she kept. An artist with an NVIDIA logo behind her reads as a side switched, not a tool used. The association does the damage before anyone watches anything. That's the deeper point. LinkedIn being a legitimate venue for art releases says less about LinkedIn than it does about how thoroughly
the rest of the internet's been strip-mined. Twitter's gone, Vimeo's a ghost town, Instagram buries anything that doesn't dance, so you end up at the corporate networking site, standing next to the chip vendor, hoping nobody reads it as an endorsement.
Durgan files this under the societal impact of art and tech side of things. And that boomer grandparents line definitely made him laugh.
Right, and it makes you ask, when the only platforms left with organic reach are built for corporate networking, what does that do to the trust we extend to art made for them?
It's an unanswerable question.
Same problem, different costume. This next one's wearing a film credit.
Whose name you stand next to? That was Grimes and NVIDIA. Now do it again, except it's Steven Soderbergh and Meta.
Right, and Anna Maria Constantine's piece at The Next Web covers this whole thing. It was the strangest story out of Cannes this year, I think. Soderbergh's film, John Lennon, The Last Interview, was built around this never-released 1980 radio conversation recorded just hours before Lennon was shot.
And the AI part, that's where the trouble started, right?
Exactly. About 10% of the visuals came from Meta's AI tools, things like abstract circles of light, a black rose dissolving into choreography. Soderbergh actually disclosed the partnership up front, which was interesting. He took all the heat for it and then reframed the whole thing as a transparency stunt. He called himself his own whistleblower.
So the backlash wasn't about the specific visuals then. It was about the company he kept.
100%. And here's the funny part. The art world, you know, they're scolding him for using AI at all, which is the predictable fight. But anyone who actually works with these tools daily is scolding him for a totally different reason. He used Meta's AI of all the models he could have reached for.
It's almost like a niche insider criticism.
Well, Juergen's read on it is that it's a bit like announcing you finally embrace fine dining and ordering the gas station sushi. There are just so many better options out there. And Soderbergh himself said it pretty plainly. You don't say yes to Meta offering you these tools and offering to finish the film and not know you're going to come in for some heat. That was part of the deal.
So the deal wasn't just about the imagery, it was about who
paid for the finish. He knew what he was signing up for.
Precisely. And Soderbergh's actual point is pretty sharp. He's saying the problem isn't that he used AI, is that everyone else won't admit they do. The credibility gap doesn't close because the work is good. It closes or doesn't based on the logo in the corner.
So Juergen's twist is that there are two separate backlashes happening simultaneously. The general art world is angry he used AI, but the people who know AI are angry he used Meta's AI. It makes you wonder then, when the bravest thing about your AI experiment is just naming the vendor, and that vendor is the part everyone winces at, what exactly are we praising?
Yeah, that's the question.
Different story now, but it pulls the same thread. What happens when the skepticism shows up before page one? What would you even put in a magazine devoted entirely to AI art? And would you brace for a glossy parade of generated images or hope for something harder?
Well, issue number 81 looks at a review from Neural Magazine by Aurelio Chansiota covering Critical Intelligence, the AI Art Magazine, number 2, edited by Christoph Grunberger, and it absolutely picks the harder path.
That's interesting because you do just
assume it's going to be a showcase.
Exactly. But it doesn't showcase flashy generated images or worship the technology at all. Instead, it gathers artists and writers to sit with the controversies, the ambiguity, and the questions nobody's answered yet, which really makes it the perfect place to close out this issue because everything in here ran into the same wall. The work itself almost didn't matter. The skepticism arrived first.
So a magazine about AI art starts from the deepest hole of all because half the audience already assumes it's a celebration of slop before they even read a page.
You've got it. The review quotes the magazine itself. What emerges is the remarkable ambiguity that AI introduces into our perception, and how artists who have embraced it have begun to reflect on the characteristics of the visual spaces they create. So the magazine's real subject isn't the pictures, it's the choice of how we engage with the ecological and ethical questions still open on the table. Credibility, it turns out, is the thing you earn one page at a time.
Durgan's read on this is that launching an AI art magazine right now is not the obvious move people assume. It's genuinely hard because of the general backlash and because everyone braces for it to be a celebration of AI slop.
He actually frames it as the exact same challenge the Intersect faces every week. The interesting work isn't the picture the model spat out. It's how artists fold these tools into a practice that was already alive.
And it pushes on his deeper question. When the tool gets frictionless, does the only thing worth talking about become the intention behind using it?
I think that's right.
Last one, and it takes that trust problem and puts a literal price on it. Picture a painting hanging on a wall, and instead of one price tag, there's a live betting line on what it'll be worth next year, and the bet itself is now being traded.
That's exactly where Emily Morley's piece at Ocula Magazine takes us, looking at how prediction markets like Polymarket are quietly moving into the art world. It's turning speculation about an artwork's future price into a tradable asset in its own right. After Substack partnered with Polymarket, the question isn't really about whether this is ethically tidy. It's more about whether value still means anything when the bet itself becomes the product.
Precisely.
Morley has a great line in there. What is being traded is no longer the asset itself, but speculation about its future value. The honest read on this, I think, is that it probably goes nowhere fast. The public already has a low opinion of AI, an even lower one of anything connected to the art market, and Polymarket and its cousins drag their own reputational baggage along, too. That's a lot of headwinds stacked up against each other.
Which is a bit of a shame, because parts of this genuinely have potential, don't you think? Like provenance verification, authenticity checks, or AI pattern recognition fed scientific data that could outperform human experts on average.
They absolutely do. But say AI and art valuation in one breath, and the skepticism is instant. It's the same pattern we've seen across this whole issue. The technology might work, but the trust to use it simply doesn't exist yet.
Jurgen's honest prediction is that this also goes nowhere soon. Too much stacked skepticism, even pushback from traditional valuation experts.
But his real point, which I think is key here, is that art pricing was never clean to begin with. He points back to the outrage when Julian Schnabel's paintings first sold for $10,000 in New York. Mostly, it seemed, because gallery politics and influencer dynamics were doing the heavy lifting back then. Setting the value of an artwork has always been a fraught, deeply human game.
And he's skeptical Polymarket fixes that, isn't he? More likely, it just adds a fresh, liquidity-weighted layer of manipulation on top of the old kind.
That's his read. So we're left with his open question. Is the art market actually migrating toward prediction platforms, or just getting colonized by the same speculative logic that's already eating everything else?
So where does all of that leave us?
Looking back at all the stories we touched on in this issue, the pattern really stood out. Whether it was Soderbergh, Grimes, or even the AI art magazine, the work itself often got waved away in favor of its associations. The skepticism showed up before anyone even had a chance to look. Our curator, Jurgen, says this issue is really him just sitting with that gap, that uncomfortable space where nobody has a clean answer for how trust gets rebuilt at the speed these tools are moving.
And that's the real open question, isn't it? What would it actually take to change a mind that decided in advance? Can trust ever move as fast as the tools? If that tension, that space between analog craft and generative design is your kind of thing, then I hope you will read the full issue and subscribe to our newsletter at theintersect.art. We are here every week with curated stories and real analysis.